Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It just doesn't make sense. You know, there's just, we desperately need help, would be the way that I put it, for people who are going to take his missing serious.
Yeah, there's no question that, you know, there still are some, you know, outstanding questions about this situation. So some of the timeline issues, you know, as we're trying to think our way through that, are, you know, where there are still open-ended questions for us. And I will say this, too, that, you know, one of the things we've been most grateful for is that we have people who are in law enforcement here in our community who have served at a very high level and understand these investigative procedures. So they've been kind of surrounding us and kind of coaching us with regards to some of these situations. Yeah, I think frustration, you know, for us and for them is a kind of across the board about how this is being navigated.
28-year-old David Gibson Smith left his home in Piles Grove, New Jersey on August 5th, 2017. He drove to Catonsville, Maryland, where he met up with a friend. Plans with that friend didn't quite work out because she had made other plans for that day, so she introduced him to another friend in the area. This second woman claims to have dropped David off at an undeveloped piece of property in Lisbon, Maryland that was owned by her uncle. She supposedly left David there with no food or water and didn't return to check on him for days. David's family began to worry when they didn't hear from him for several days, which was out of character for him. They started to piece together his last known whereabouts, but when they got to the property in Maryland, there was no trace of David. This is a very bizarre case, and nothing makes much sense. What we do know is that David has now been missing for months, and his family is desperate for answers. I'm Marissa, and this is episode 99 of The Vanished, the story of David's disappearance. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I've been watching David's case unfold from the start because I've seen coverage of his story on my local news stations. I only live about an hour away from Piles Grove, New Jersey, where David was living with his parents. So when I was asked to cover his case, I was interested in learning more because all of the news articles seemed to be repeating the same basic information. I spoke with David's parents, Doug and Julie, for this episode. They're hoping that someone will come forward with a tip that will lead them to their son. David had battled with drug and alcohol addiction over the years, but according to those close to him, he had been doing well for some time. He had completed a rehab program in January of this year. Leading up to his disappearance, he was living with his parents and working at a local golf course.
David's background, as far as an athlete in high school, was in the area of golf, and he actually went to college to pursue a career in professional golf management. And so he feels very comfortable in and around golf courses, golf shops, pro shops, et cetera. And so when he began working, he returned to the local course here in our community, and he stepped into golf maintenance, and so he was taking care of the golf course.
His family saw David making all the right steps to continue to move his life in a positive direction. David had saved up money from his job and purchased a car for himself just weeks before his disappearance. The next big step for David was going to be moving out of his family's home. He had discussed with them that he planned to move in with a coworker who lived locally. So on the morning of August 5th, David packed two small suitcases and four boxes of shoes into his car. His family had stated that this was normal for David to keep all of his shoes and boxes at home, so this wasn't out of the ordinary for him to pack them this way. When he left at 8:30 that morning, his parents were under the impression that he was planning to go stay with the coworker that he was going to move in with. Most of David's belongings were left behind in his room at home, so they expected him back within a few days to pick up more of his stuff and to do his laundry. His father, Doug, was able to reach David via text message later on the 5th, and that's the last time that they heard from him. David is the kind of person who frequently keeps in touch with his family, not just his parents, but also his brothers, among other family members. He also frequently posts on social media. When no one had heard from David for a few days, his family started to become concerned. This is when they began to try to track him down. They learned that he had not gone to stay with the coworker and had in fact traveled to Maryland to meet with a friend. David's parents told me how he met this woman.
We're going to call her Lady Number One from Catonsville.
David was in a program in 2015 called Right Start.
Right Turn,
which is in the kind of in the greater Baltimore area, if I'm not mistaken, and southern part of Baltimore, between there and Annapolis. And so he was in a program there. That is where he made her acquaintance. And so I think that they had a friendship. She's older than David. And so as a result of her being older, I think that she had kind of a thought that she was more of a maternal figure for David. That's kind of,
or at least that's what she said to us.
That's how she described the situation, right?
Throughout this process, she's maintained that concept or that idea that David was more like a son to her, which, you know, I have very mixed feelings about. David's very handsome. He's 6'4" tall. He's striking when he walks into a room and draws a lot of attention from women in general.
But that is how he became acquainted with her. And I think that that was more of a casual sort of a relationship after the time he met her, where he would just kind of stay in touch occasionally. And I think on social media, if I'm not mistaken.
Doug and Julie explained how they used David's cell phone records to track his last communications with the first woman and then another second woman that he had encountered in Maryland.
As a matter of fact, he didn't tell us he was going in that direction. And so when we discovered that his cell phone had gone, you know, we hadn't heard from him for a couple of days, and then discovered that he hadn't been at work, I pulled his cell phone records and looked at his phone records and saw, you know, these Maryland exchanges repeatedly, you know, several times, not phone calls as well as text messages. And so we began, you know, initially looking for him by sending text messages to those numbers and then also placing phone calls to those numbers. And the woman from Catonsville, woman number one, was the first to respond. And when she did respond, she told us, yes, that she had seen David on the 5th of August, that she had invited David actually to come down to Catonsville, and that they were going to hang out for a couple of days. And that I guess something came up between, I don't know, their initial conversation. I'm not sure where this fell apart, but she wound up going to a concert and was not available on the 5th of August. And so as a result of her unavailability, introduced David to this other woman from Ellicott City, woman number two. And so he had talked to her on social media, woman number two as well, and then also by text message, but had never, to the best of our knowledge, had never had a face-to-face meeting with her.
Well, I'm sure he hasn't, because I hacked into his Facebook account and saw the initial communication. And it clearly stated that I'm looking forward to meeting you. So we know that he did not know her.
And any more than through some text messages and social media.
I think it's worth mentioning here that both women are significantly older than David. The first woman is in her early 40s, and the second woman is in her late 30s. We don't know exactly what David's intentions were when he made that trip to Maryland, but his family's been trying to piece that together with his communications with the two women he ended up meeting with.
Yeah, I think that the intention was that when he went to see woman number one from Catonsville, that probably he was going to meet woman number two from Ellicott City at the same time.
That Facebook message was on the 28th of July. So it was a little bit of all of these text messages and phone calls began around the 28th, 27th, 28th, and 29th of July.
With woman number two.
There was only one from her.
And then woman number one's communication, I think, and text message began on the 25th of July.
From the information that they've been able to gather from these two women, as bizarre as it may sound, this is what they know about David's movements before he disappeared.
I'm uncertain of the details with regards to, you know, where he drove to immediately. If he drove to Catonsville immediately or if he drove to Ellicott City immediately, I don't know. It seems as though when he arrived in the Catonsville, Ellicott City area, that he met woman number one from Catonsville, and then somewhere in the midst of that had opportunity then to be introduced to woman number two. And I guess from, Ben, Julie, help me with the details here perhaps, but I think the woman number one from Catonsville then said to David, I think they hung out, all three of them together, and then woman number one from Catonsville said she was unable to go ahead and she had a schedule for that evening. And I think that she left, and so David either drove to the Ellicott City location or was already at the Ellicott City location. I'm uncertain about the detail about that. But yes, his car was at the Ellicott City location, and that's where he remained. His car remained. Now, he was driven then to the property in Lisbon on Woodbine Road. Woman number two from Ellicott City took him to that property.
In her car.
In her car.
So David gets dropped off at this property with no food or water. This property also has no shelter.
It is just land. It's owned by woman number two's uncle. And it's kind of a junkyard type property. There's one very small shed on the property. But it was not unlocked, and it was not something that David could have fit in terms of, you know, staying there.
It was packed with supplies.
Yeah, it had wood and all different kinds of things in it. So it was not something that he could have stayed in. And the remainder of the items on the property were two old junky beat up cars. There were a lot of things covered under tarps. There were
riding lawnmowers.
Many, many riding lawnmowers. My point is no shelter.
The property itself is heavily wooded, and so it has a stream that runs through the property that feeds into a large pond. In addition to the large pond, there's also a couple of the acres are kind of open field type areas, but with heavy, you know, tall grass. And so, it's not a developed piece of property.
To me, this story just sounds crazy. Why would David have someone drop him off at an undeveloped property when he had his own vehicle? This was in August when it's very hot. He would have needed water at the very least. I wondered what this second woman's story was about leaving him there.
This adds to some of the problems with regards to, like you had mentioned, about the clarity of the story. There seems to be some inconsistencies surrounding this. And so
as soon as we arrived at the property on the 12th of August, knowing that David was missing, Doug immediately started searching the property, and I had, along with my daughter-in-law, had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with woman number two. She was clearly nervous. She wouldn't look us in the eyes. You know, she gave information like she told us that she didn't take David out to the property until Monday morning versus telling the police this all happened on Sunday. So there's some inconsistencies in her story. She did not leave any supplies with David on whatever day it was that she left him. I'm assuming it was Sunday. That makes more sense. And she, you know, gave us a little bit of description of the things that she said to David. And one of the things that she said to David was, "This is my uncle's property. He's not very happy when I bring people on the property. He usually comes out on Wednesdays. And if you see him coming, you need to hide." And secondly, she said to me, "This is where I like to come when I need to detox or to get away." And she said, and then somehow in the story to the police, she made the statement that David said that he needed a place to detox and that this was going to be a good place. I don't understand all of that. I don't believe all of that. I think that there are conflicting stories told at this point. She told us, you know, here's where there's a hammock where David could have slept. But again, she left him without anything, no food. At that point, nothing. One point, I think she said, you know, if you need anything, about a mile and a half down the road, there you can walk down there and get something. There's a little shopping plaza, but I'm not sure David really knew which direction that was or where that was, or, you know, it's just very strange under the circumstances. And then not to only that, but to leave someone there in danger, as it sounds to me, you know, my uncle's going to be really angry if he sees you here. And to tell you the truth, even on David's part, that doesn't make a lot of sense that he would have stayed. You know, that's one question that we have about this is, you know, why did David stay? She promised to come right back for him, and she never did. Well, she did on Wednesday.
That's what she had reported, that she returned.
She reported.
Right. She returned to the property on Wednesday, and she had told us in a phone call that was actually, you know, later that week that she had returned to the property on Wednesday to check on David, and she was unable to put eyes on David. She didn't see him on Wednesday. She said that she had taken some supplies to David.
A tub of supplies.
And left them, but did not see David on that Wednesday.
The tub of supplies that she, I actually looked in the tub of supplies that she supposedly, that she did take to David on, supposedly on Wednesday. I have my doubts about when she actually took it there. And there was nothing but a blanket, a Coleman lighter, Coleman lantern. And there was still, again, no food, no water in the tub that she took to him. So, again, for me, that raised questions about whether or not she even went back out there on Wednesday, whether she took these to the property knowing that we were coming on Saturday, you know, to make it look like she had been back out there. So that's only my speculation. You know, I'm not sure if anybody else holds that speculation, but as a mom, I can't imagine that this woman would leave him out there on Wednesday, not find him, and not call the police then. You know, there's just lots of unanswered, many, many unanswered questions about what actually happened or if he was even really on that property.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. One question that's been nagging at me is whether or not David was ever even at that property, and if there was any evidence that someone had been staying there.
There was some physical evidence, bottles. Again, this is the uncle's property, so I can't speculate as to, you know, what would have been there before, you know, David was presumably there. But there was some bottles there that looked relatively new. There was a mistake made in the patrol officers did not collect those bottles. And so they sat there for another 4 or 5 days before they were collected. And as a result, they are not usable for determining if David had used them. So at this point, we have no evidence that David was ever on his property.
Another puzzling piece of this story is why David would have had this woman drop him off at the property. Why not drive himself? He also left his keys with a woman he had just met. She's claimed that he couldn't have brought his car there because of her uncle.
While Doug was walking on the property, she did give my daughter-in-law a little bit of an explanation. It's how we determined that he was driven out in her car to the property, and that was because the uncle who owns the property would have been very irate to drive by and see someone else's car on his property. That was the story that was given to us, but
that's the best description we have at this point.
For us, that doesn't make a lot of sense because I can't imagine. David's car was brand new, just paid for it, worked very, very hard for it. I can't imagine him leaving the keys in anyone's hands.
It wasn't a brand new car. It was brand new for David.
Right, right.
This property in question and the surrounding area was thoroughly searched by law enforcement early on in the investigation.
On the 12th of August, when the Howard County Patrol officers had come, they did a remarkable job, you know, in the first initial stages
four
of this
hours.
Investigation. In the first 4 hours, they were incredible in that they had a helicopter up off the ground from Fort Meade, which had an infrared camera on, to go ahead and scan the property and all around the area to see if there was anybody on the property.
There's a pond, a rather large pond on the property, which they were immediately concerned about.
Then they brought a search and rescue team in, and they jumped in the water. And at the same time they were doing that, other officers were filling out a missing persons report that went national. In addition to that, they were searching in the community and, you know, putting out a statewide sort of a situation in hospitals, you know, and they were looking for to see if there's, you know, David Gibson Smith, if anybody, you know, had any hits, and they did not. And so we were on the property at that point, and the car was back in Ellicott City. We asked the question about what to do about the car. During the 4 hour time, a patrol officer had gone and secured the keys. And we picked up the car in Ellicott City according to directions and drove it home, and we put it in the garage and didn't touch it according to directions. And then on the 19th of August, I believe it was, it would have been the 18th of August, the New Jersey State Police came to our home, and they worked in cooperation with Howard County Police, and they processed the car.
I wondered if they'd had tracking dogs come out to possibly track David's scent in the event that he had been there and left the property.
They did have a cadaver water dog,
yeah.
And who didn't find anything. But then on Sunday, I got a call from one of the patrol officers who said it was turning. They were turning it over to the lead detective for criminal missing persons.
Criminal Investigation Division,
yes.
CID.
And so later that day or Monday, I can't remember now, he did call us and tell us that they were getting a warrant to search the property with cadaver dogs. And that, in fact, did take place on the 17th of August.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is the property, the initial property that's owned by this family is 22 plus acres, but surrounding that property brings it to a total of 44 plus acres.
Mostly wooded area at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know exactly how many dogs they had. The detective told us that they ran two dogs completely out. In other words, they couldn't go anymore because
it was a hot day.
It's a hot day, and they just basically ran them out.
And plus they had a large number of volunteers that went with ATVs on the property as well.
Right, right.
When they do a search like that, I guess he showed us that they had taken the property and you know, made it quadrants, and then they worked, you know, several different quadrants until all the property was covered. He said that they did a fairly thorough search.
Doug and Julie have also spoken to people who live on the surrounding properties to see if they could have seen anything.
There are neighbors, and the one neighbor, his property is, remember I told you it is, there's a stream that runs to the property. So his property butts right back up against the stream, and he has access to the property. He actually drove his golf cart over to see us on the 12th when we were there to see what was going on. And so he has, you know, he kind of has eyes on the property and sees what's going on the property and knows the people.
He said he had not seen any activity on the property.
Knows the people who own the property. And he said he didn't have any recollection, or he didn't see anybody on the property. And then secondly, on the other side of the property, there's also, I think, somebody in law enforcement who actually was there on the property on Wednesday fishing with his children and didn't see anybody on the property. And
so, no sign of David.
We know that David had packed some of his belongings the morning that he left home. When his parents got his car back, they found those items, but three things went missing along with David.
No, his phone is missing. His wallet is missing. There also was a, you know, one of those Nike string bags, you know, that you put on your shoulders. Kind of, it's a loosely hanging backpack. So he had one of those that's missing.
Since David's phone was on his parents' account, they've been able to access those records as well.
So he's on my plan. You know, I have access to that. And so one of the ways, or one of the reasons why we began to recognize that something may have happened, was because just David just doesn't go, you know, without staying in touch with me. And so 3 or 4 days at the longest, I texted him on Saturday, and he responded twice. I texted him on Sunday morning, believing him to be at work, which he worked a shift on Sunday morning from 5:30 to 8:30. He was supposed to have worked a shift, and so I texted him at the end. Didn't hear from him back on Sunday morning. Didn't hear from him on Monday. Didn't hear from him Tuesday. Didn't hear from him Wednesday. And so as a result of that, checked some last numbers, and that's when one of his coworkers said that he hadn't been in work. And that's where we found the numbers from the Maryland exchange. But to answer your question, the last text that he received and the last contact that he had used his phone, Julie, was it 4 o'clock?
At 4:10 a.m. Was the last phone call that he received. And it was 2 minutes long. And it was from woman number 2 in Ellicott City. The odd thing about that was he was supposed to be staying in her home. By 7:55, when Doug texted David,
he received that text. It's on his phone log, and then there's one more phone text on his log a bit later that morning. But other than that, they were not responded to, right. But the phone log ends on the 6th of August.
One thing that the Smiths have wondered about is if the activity on the women's phones could hold some answers.
As we continue to try to ask some questions, we continue to, you know, have some unanswered questions.
For instance, we have asked since the beginning for the girls' phones to be dumped to see what kind of communication might have been going on. And we started immediately in the beginning to ask for that, and we just received word that that's not going to be possible.
Subpoenas have been issued.
But we don't know if we have been having been done in time.
When I was speaking with Doug and Julie, they made a really good point. If you were going to drop someone off in the middle of nowhere, like the second woman claimed, wouldn't you call them or send a text message at some point to check on them? Maybe to see if they're okay, or ask if they need anything, or to let them know when you're coming back to pick them up? There's no known record of any such attempts being made.
A further question for us is this. Leading up to David going to Maryland, multiple text message correspondence with the number one girl from Catonsville, and then also not as many, but some correspondence, text message with girl number 2. Now, if you drop somebody off on a property, you'd think that they'd send a text message, are you okay, right? That nothing that we're aware of at this point, just because David's phone records go dead then on that Sunday. if his phone could have been charged, you know, which I can't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case. That's one of those unanswered questions as far as for us is concerned. You know, how do you go having, you know, multiple text messages, several text messages with both people involved here, and then all of a sudden things go absolutely, you know, just silent. And then, too, his social media went silent on the 4th of August. And in the past, in, you know, in David's history, there have been occasions when he didn't have a cell phone, but that never precluded him from going to a library or being on social media somehow and staying in touch. It never did.
He always stayed in touch with a member of the family. And we've been given different explanations for that, but ultimately what we're going to say and what we hold to is even if David decided, let's say that he needed a couple of days off, he would have told us that that would have been a part of a conversation that we've had. There's been implications that we had a major fight and David left under those circumstances, you know, that we had had a major fight with him, and that's just completely
false
information. So, you know, I just don't know how to answer those questions about why he would go radio silent, so to speak, all of a sudden, very suddenly, and have nothing beyond that. You know, that's been probably the most painful portion of this whole experience is that, well, there are many painful things, but he just is not a person to be out of touch, and including his brothers and his aunt, who he was very close to.
And his sister-in-law.
And his sister-in-law, my other son's wife. There's nothing. It's our understanding that even, let's say David needed to sell the phone and someone put in a new SIM card, they can still track the phone through the serial number. And that's not happened.
Then, too, to add to Julie's, you know, validation with regards to David being gone, and he had been working, you know, 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so during his working, he'd saved enough money. He bought a car. And so the car that he was driving, he paid cash for and maybe was, I think, you know, less than 5 weeks old for him. And so, you know, he valued the car at a very high level. And so in addition to that, he had a bank account with a good bit of money. And so to make the statement, he just walked away, it seems unplausible to me that if he was going to go ahead and walk away, all he would have needed to do on that Saturday morning on the 5th of August was to just drive to the bank and pick up the money, empty his account. He did none of that.
Well, and that has to do with people saying that he was out on a drug binge because he had had some experiences in the past with being in rehab. And our position is, well, if he's going out on a drug binge, wouldn't he have taken, you know, this significant amount of money with him to make the purchases?
It just doesn't seem plausible to us.
Right.
One of the stories that the second woman has told is that her parents didn't want David staying at their house, and that's why she took him to the property. Since her parents may be among the last people to have seen David, it would be interesting to hear their version of the story. But they've never been interviewed.
Supposedly, the parents did not want David staying at their home because there had been some previous issues with the daughter in the past and bringing in people. And the story goes, according to her, while we were out on the property, my mom and dad didn't want David to stay at the house, but yet she didn't say why. And according to the police, they were never interviewed. To me, it's a little bit curious as to why you know, the parents weren't interviewed in the midst of all of this, at least to say, well, why didn't you want him? You know, was there something in his demeanor that you didn't like? You know, anything. I have a little bit of difficulty with trying to understand why they wouldn't have said, why is this young man's car in front of my house for an entire week? Where is he?
Some auto insurance companies offer discounts to their customers who are willing to put a tracking device on their vehicles. This lets them monitor your driving habits and reduce your rates if the data they collect shows that you're a safe driver. David had one of these on his car, and that has offered some clues.
And we do also know that she used the car as David's missing.
And the reason that we can validate that is because when David, you know, purchased the car, he purchased his own insurance, and our insurance company, his insurance company, sent him a tracker that can be plugged into the car to tell when the car is started, to tell whether or not the car is driven safely, what the times are that the car has started. So it doesn't have a GPS in it, but it does have a tracker in it. And so somewhere between, well, multiple times, eight times to be specific, between the 7th of August and the 12th of August, the car was started and it was driven four of those eight times.
Because of the tracker in the car, someone was in his car Saturday night into Sunday morning.
The 5th into the 6th.
Yeah, the 5th into the 6th. The car was turned on several times. They didn't go anywhere. I think it went 0.1 mile, which would have pulled it out of the driveway and put it in front of the, you know, front of the house.
Presumably.
But, yeah, presumably. But the other, those days in particular really bother me because it says to me that he wasn't comfortable in the house and he went outside to sleep in his car. And I'm only saying this because I'm his mom and I know how he thinks. And that feels very much to me like probably could have been a part of that story.
Factually, we don't know that.
Yes, we don't. That's just my theory about my son.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. There have been some reported sightings of David around the time that he went missing, but none of them have been 100% confirmed.
The one thing with regards to trying to identify some corroborating evidence, you know, somebody had had eyewitness and a sighting about David on the property, it's sketchy. You know, we don't have anything, you know, absolutely confirmed. However, when this began to unfold following the 12th of August, you know, there were a few people on Facebook who said that, you know, at the location there on Woodbine Road, which is, there's not a shoulder on that road.
Very rural.
It's kind of a bit more rural, right? And it's also, you would know if somebody's walking alongside the road because it's not typically a walking road. And so as a result of that, a couple of people had said that one person specifically said that they thought that they saw David and maybe even offered a description that may have fit some of the clothing that he was wearing. Another person said that they thought that they saw David, you know, with another person with a backpack on their back around that time. And so we had maybe three or four different eyewitness sightings. Probably the one that was most validated was, well, I'm not even positive it was validated. Somebody said that they saw him down the street in Woodbine at a tavern that's there.
Well, and then we also had a gentleman who said that on the 7th or 8th, he called the police dispatch that there was someone walking down the road. At that time, we didn't know David was missing, but he called because it was so strange to have someone, you know, it's a well-known community. Everybody knows everyone. And it was very strange to have this person walking down the road. And this gentleman described the clothing that David had put on when he left our home on Saturday. But he wasn't able to report it until he knew David was missing on the 12th.
But as far as corroborative evidence, you know, and the facts around that situation, the only person we have talked to, you know, who can say with confidence that they saw him was the person who took him actually on the property.
Right.
One aspect of the story that just doesn't make sense to me is why David would have agreed to this plan to be dropped off at that property. He could have driven home, he could have slept in his car, and he had access to money in his bank account. He could have gone and gotten a motel room somewhere.
He had money in the bank, that's correct. And I think that he had the ability to perhaps do that. And listen, he's a pretty resourceful dude. He could have slept in the car.
Law enforcement has taken the stance that David walked off of that property at some point and just wants to be on his own, that he wanted to disappear. His family has a lot of issues with that because David was so close to his family and he didn't take any of his money out of the bank. If someone wants to get away, they don't have to stage their own disappearance. When I look at cases like this and the idea of an intentional disappearance is thrown out there, I like to look and see if the person was making plans for the future. We know that David didn't tell his parents about his trip to Maryland, but he did let his employer know that he was going to be gone for a few days.
He actually had mentioned to his employer that he was going to be gone, he thought, for the weekend, and that he would be back to work on Tuesday.
The boss and us both believed that he planned on being home after the weekend, by his indication.
That's what he had said. He told him, I'll be back on Tuesday.
As you can imagine, Doug and Julie have gone over all of the facts and possible scenarios in this case many, many times, and so many things just don't add up for them.
The whole, you know, frustration for us has been that the fact that David has gone kind of radio silent, both on social media as well as on his cell phone, is just wildly out of character for David. For as long as David, you know, has been our son, there's never been more than 3 or 4 days, you know, where we've not heard from him in some way, whether it be a text or a Facebook comment to one of his aunts or to one of his brothers, or that's the whole thrust of our concern, obviously. Then when you begin to stack up some of these unanswered questions, things get, you know, rather seems to get rather complicated for us.
and everything absolutely went silent on the 6th of between 4:10 and 7:55 a.m. on August 6th. It becomes very, very suspicious for us because that was so completely out of his character to not respond to our text messages or phone calls.
And he had, I know that he left the house on the 5th of August, and I know that he had some money in his pocket, and so even if he needed a phone charger, you know, that's a couple dollars. You know, there are things that just don't seem to make a lot of sense as to the reason why that was the case. And even if he was on the property, dropped off on the property, and he walked off the property to the plaza that is about a mile or a mile and a half down the road, again, still...
he would have charged his phone.
Still, they have phone chargers for his phone. And something, you know, he would have charged the phone. He could have sat in the McDonald's and charged the phone.
So just to go over the important facts in this case one more time, since this story can get a little confusing, this is what we know. David left his home at 8:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 5th. His parents were under the impression that he was going to stay with a coworker. This coworker is the person that he had told his parents that he was planning to move in with. David ended up going to Maryland to meet with one woman who was a friend and another woman that he was meeting for the first time. His plans with the first woman fell through, and the second woman supposedly dropped him off at a property owned by her uncle. She did not get permission for David to be there and mentioned that her uncle would be really mad if he found out that he was there. She allegedly left him there with no supplies. She's also stated that she left him there on Sunday the 6th, and other times has said it was Monday the 7th. David had replied to text messages from his family on the 5th, but when they attempted to reach him on the 6th, they got no response. The last text message that was sent from David's phone was sent to the first woman at 12:19 a.m. on August 6th. At 12:21 a.m., she replied to his text message. At 12:36 a.m., the first woman called David's phone, and the call lasted for about 5 minutes. At 4:10 a.m. on the 6th, David's phone received a call from the second woman, and that call lasted for 2 minutes. It's important to note that those calls and text messages happened when the second woman claimed to have been with David, not after she supposedly dropped him off. Doug tried to text David at 7:55 a.m. on the 6th, but got no response. The second woman claims that she had gone back to the property on Wednesday the 9th and left supplies there for him, but these supplies still did not include food or water. When the Smiths went to look for David on the 12th, she met them at the property to help look for him. They searched the property themselves and couldn't find David. That's when they decided to call the police. The second woman left at this time, claiming that she had to go to work for 2 hours. She did return later and spoke to the police. David's car had been left at the second woman's house, and he left his keys with her. The tracker on David's car has yielded some clues showing that his car was turned on several times and driven after he was allegedly left at the property. His parents found the items that David had packed before leaving home, except his phone, wallet, and a drawstring backpack. David's case certainly is one that leaves you with more questions than answers. I have tons of questions myself. I keep wondering if David was ever even at the property on Woodbine Road, or if that's just some kind of red herring. There's no evidence of him being there, although there was that one person who thought they saw him walking down the road. Even though they thoroughly searched the property on Woodbine Road, they haven't searched the other places that David had been that weekend. Julia has been frustrated by this.
They can't prove he was there. There's nothing, there's no evidence to prove that he was there. So to me, that means then you go back to the place right before where he was. So that becomes part of the concern for us is we had asked, you know, have you thought about, you know, searching? And he said, oh, we've been inside the house. We didn't see anything. And that's not the same as doing a forensic search.
Their response to us has been, you know, probable cause,
right,
you know, all along.
They say they don't have probable cause.
Their statement to us is, you know, there's no criminal element at this point. But, you know, one of the homicide detectives has said to us, you know, if you're making these observations about this story, one of his observations was, you know, that, you know, people would not take you back to the place where, you know, there would be any criminal activity.
The scene of the crime,
yeah,
so to speak.
So that's why he's a bit suspicious surrounding the property to begin with.
Why would David have gone to this property in the first place? The woman claims that her parents didn't want him staying at their home, but why go there? Why not get a room somewhere or drive home or sleep in your car? The idea has been thrown around that maybe David was struggling with his addiction and didn't want to disappoint his family, so he went to Maryland. Okay, let's run with that idea for just a minute. Some people have suggested that maybe he wanted to get dropped off there so he could detox and not have the temptation of his car. Where that stops adding up for me is when he disappears and those women don't attempt to check on him for days. He had been communicating with them frequently and then it just stopped. Why hasn't he used his phone? There's one thing that you need to feed an addiction, and that's money. Why hasn't he touched the money in his bank account? I do feel that there's a strong possibility that people are not being completely forthcoming about what happened during David's trip to Maryland. I could be wrong, and that's just a hunch. It's like we're missing a huge piece of the puzzle, and once that's figured out, it may become more clear what's happened here. The most important question that hasn't been answered is, where is David? There's a $6,000 reward being offered in his case, but they haven't gotten a single call to their tip line.
Something else is interesting to me. We have a $6,000 reward, and there has not been one call on the reward line. Not one.
You know, you get to a place where you've talked this through so many times, and eventually you still come back to some of the same conclusions, and that is, you know, the car, the phone, the bank account, and those things which are tangible.
And the car keys.
And yeah. Which have no answers for, right? Why no water or supplies? Even if the eyewitness, you know, reports could be true or were true, still that doesn't answer the question about where he is.
David is described as being 6 feet 4 inches tall and weighing approximately 230 pounds. He has dark blonde hair and brown eyes. David has a large, distinct tattoo on his chest along with some other tattoos as well. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of David Gibson Smith, you can call the number that they've set up for tips, which is 856-381-1357. You can also call the Howard County Police Department at 410-313-STOP. Or you can send them an email at hcpdcrimetips@howardcountymd.gov. That brings us to the end of episode 99. I'd like to thank Doug and Julie for taking the time to speak with me. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. You can find me on Facebook, where there's both a page and a private discussion group. I'm on Twitter at TheVanishedPod and on Instagram as TheVanishedPodcast. Join me next time for episode 100. Can you believe it? I'll be discussing a case from Texas. Thanks for listening.
I believe this case has been completely botched by law enforcement from the beginning. They kind of took a position that because he was 28 and had his own resources, that this was an intentional move on his part to be gone of his own volition. They have said from the beginning, they believe because he left his keys behind. They interpret it as David having left his keys behind for his car. We interpret that differently, that it would make him non-traceable, his keys and his phone. That's their reasoning behind you know, this idea that David would be wanting to get away from home. One of the things that happened in the Maryland area in the last 2 years is there was a case where a man from New Jersey was lured by a woman as part of an initiation for the M13 drug gang, and he was murdered, and that is currently on trial. And, you know, on several occasions we've mentioned that, you know, is that something that can be looked into? And we've not gotten any response to that. So, you know, things like that are very disturbing to us, that there hasn't been a lot of willingness to look beyond just the fact that he's decided to disappear. That case, I think you said it's going on now, Doug.
Well, the only reason we became aware of that is because the people who are in law enforcement that are around us, they pulled that, you know, and took a look at some of those situations. And so I'm not exactly sure, Marissa, where that's at in the process.
It's happening in Silver Springs.
I think that it was in the greater Baltimore area in the Silver Springs community, if I'm not mistaken.
So, you know, that's something that floats in the back of my mind, that things that have just not been taken seriously or investigated seriously in the midst of David's case.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but 2 trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.